Hello, and welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Growth Dojo podcast, the podcast that teaches you everything that you need to know to build and scale Web3 products and protocols. My name is Abel, and I will be your host today as we dive into today's episode. Today, I have the good fortune of inviting a guest, and that guest is Jaymin Patel. He is the founder and CEO of Kadi. Kadi is a platform that simplifies and secures every single crypto transaction for you. It's kind of like a on-chain companion, if you will, a co-pilot. You know, if you're a DeFi trader or someone who does a lot of trades on-chain, you want to find the best price for your assets, and Kadi allows you to do that. So what they do is, whenever you're about to make a crypto transaction, their Chrome extension, which you can download and use, kind of like Honey, if you know about Honey as a Chrome extension, it pops up, and just before you make the trade, Kadi can help you find the cheapest, most optimal route for your trade, for the best execution. You can also find out if you're getting rugged. You know, they have some scam detection in their Chrome extension. It's a pretty cool product, and I had the great fortune of interviewing Jaymin, who built the product. He has a very interesting background. He started off as a quant from Citibank, and he's now transitioned to a crypto trader and a crypto product builder. I had a very interesting conversation with Jaymin. We covered various different topics, speaking about Kadi as a product and how it sits in between dApps and wallets. We spoke a bit about security concerns in the crypto space, which are rampant. We spoke a bit about liquidity fragmentation in Web3 and DeFi, which is also another big problem. We had this shared rant about how terrible the bridging experience is in Web3 and DeFi. And so that was really fun to talk about, as well as talking about product analytics and how to build trust into the crypto products that we build, which is a very important thing to keep in mind as a crypto product builder. And then finally, I handed the mic to Jaymin, and he had a little bit of a rant about the recent phenomenon that is points. And so that was very interesting. So if you're interested in any of those subjects, tune in. It's going to be a fantastic episode. Without further ado, let's get into it. Let's go. Hello, Jaymin. Thank you very much for joining us today on the Growth Dojo podcast. I've given an introduction on Kadi so people know what you're working on. So I want to start today's conversation with the first question, which is, how does Kadi ensure that users get the best execution on their crypto trades across centralized exchanges as well as decentralized ones?
Well, appreciate you having me on the podcast, Abel. It's a pleasure to be here on Growth Dojo. So this was a problem that we noticed, that there's, you know, a very large spectrum of different places to trade on. Whether you trade on centralized exchanges, the likes of Binance, Kraken, KuCoin, you name it, or decentralized. You know, there's a multitude of options across different chains. A lot of people use Uniswap, where the deepest liquidity is, but you're not really sure if you're getting the best price. So what Kadi does, it kind of works in between dApps and wallets, and it allows you to get the best price on all of your on-chain trades. Picking up the trade from Uniswap's front end, for example, it does work on aggregators too, the likes of 1inch or CowSwap, and then making sure out of 15 different routes that you're getting the absolute best price, which will get you the most tokens and be gas optimized, protecting against MEV as well, a minor extractable value. And the cool thing is it kind of works with your current framework. So there's no switching cost to use it, and you'll be getting the best price on any single trade that you want across four different chains.
That's amazing. So you said a lot there, and I want to break some of that down. So the first thing I want to talk to you about is the fact that you guys are kind of in between, right? You're not quite a dApp, but you're also not quite a wallet. Maybe talk to me a bit about your product and where it sits within that landscape.
So yeah, right now we have a million different dApps. You know, there's always something popping up, which is new and exciting. And we also have a lot of options for wallets, but there's some pretty dominant players in the space. For example, you know, most people who are swapping, they'd immediately think of Uniswap. And they might plug in their MetaMask wallet, which has a wallet connection. But, you know, I do think there is this area in between dApps and wallets, which is somewhat underexplored, which I see Kadi as a bit of an exploration into this space. So before your transactions actually execute, Caddy can pick them up and then read them to make sure a number of things, right? We can check the price, making sure that you get the absolute best price, as I mentioned. You know how we do that? It's meta aggregation, which means aggregating aggregators, and we can ensure that your trade goes to the best price. We can also look at the transaction for anything malicious that's happening. So whether that's, you know, there's a rug pull or there's something scary. And, you know, this space can also add extra information. You know, we can tell users what's going on with their transaction, put it in plain English, as well as add data there. And I think, you know, if we think about the number of different wallet solutions, we've seen kind of Zerion just launch a wallet, Rabi wallet, you know, is really popularly used. You know, there's now account abstraction wallets, things like smart wallets, like Safe. Users are kind of sport for choice, but they can only keep their funds, you know, any particular token in one wallet. A lot of people have tested different wallets, but there's this kind of aggregation of wallets that you need to do if you're managing a crypto portfolio. And then getting access to the absolute best dApps for whatever you're trying to do, whether you're swapping, whether you're staking, trading perpetuals, that's a bit of a mess right now. So I think, you know, being in this space, we can actually help out users along their journey to declutter the experience and remove the friction between navigating all these mess of dApps and wallets.
Yeah, so almost like a layer on top of wallets, Caddy is, right?
Yeah, so it's user facing. Basically, every time you're at, like executing a transaction, Caddy will pop up, and if it can save you money on a trade, then it's you know, very similar to an experience you have in Web2. If you've ever used the Chrome extension Honey, which gets you coupon codes every time you check out, you know, it kind of works like that, sitting in the background and then popping up to the user saying, by the way, we can help you out here. And we've got a few different plans. Won't go into too much detail, but 2024 is going to be an exciting one where we'll, you know, release some features which within this space between dApps and wallets is going to help users out as and where needed.
Amazing. I'm very excited to hear about those. You kind of alluded to it there in your response to my question, the security aspect of crypto, right? I think that unfortunately, this space is rife with phishing, loss of funds, hacks, rugs, you name it. What are your views on how we can tackle that as an industry? Because I honestly think it's a barrier to adoption, right? Developer adoption, investor adoption, user adoption. So yeah, what are your thoughts then on how we can address that?
Yeah, so security is fundamental, right? You know, the first time I ever used on-chain crypto, I got scammed. This was back in 2017. I was, you know, using a Bitcoin wallet. I put it on a phishing website, had no idea what was going on, and lost my money instantly. And it's pretty amazing to me how we still haven't solved these problems in the space. A lot of people, they lose, you know, their really high valued NFTs, they lose tokens, just by clicking on a wrong link. And, you know, I guess it's the immutability and irreversibility of transactions, right? That, you know, once the funds are out of your wallet, there's not much you can do. And it's also a complicated space to navigate because you've got to take care of seed phrases. You've got to make sure that, you know, the wallets that you're keeping are secure. You know, browser hacks are pretty common. As well as, you know, there's the protocol side as well. So people lose money from protocol hacks. So those companies that are building decentralized infrastructure need to keep their smart contracts protected, need to do proper audits. We saw like over 3 billion that got hacked in 2022. You know, I'm not sure what it is for 2023, but I'd imagine it's very similar. You know, it's one hack a week, basically. So this is a real problem that I think will continue to exist. I think it's just, you know, something that we need to solve as an industry, and people need confidence to navigate on chain. If we're trying to build a more robust financial future for ourselves and a more decentralized future, then we can't be having people onboarding and immediately losing their money. You know, it's something that, you know, is a real big problem. And well, I guess, you know, one answer to this is Caddy, right? So we protect against phishing scams. We look at, you know, the most recent list of hacked protocols. People can self-report that as well, and make sure that the front ends that you're using are whitelisted and safe. And then we can also alert you if you're about to buy a token that has anything malicious in the contract. For example, if it's a honeypot scam, meaning you can put funds in, but you can't actually exchange funds out, we will alert the user. We use security providers like Blowfish. There's some great security providers in this space, but they're not fully integrated to every application. They're not integrated to all the wallets. And we see Caddy as a way to kind of exist between those wallets and the dApps that you're using to make sure that you know, your trades are protected.
That's amazing. It sounds like something that a lot of people could benefit from, right? Especially those who do a lot of on-chain activity. Another thing that's plaguing us, and you kind of somewhat spoke about it there, is fragmented liquidity. I think that if you want to do any sort of trade that is of a certain volume or past a certain point or past a certain threshold, it's very difficult to get execution on that. So I wonder, like, how are you thinking? And it prevents people from getting the best execution on their trades, right? So how do you see us in the Web3 space with the proliferation of L1s, L2s, dealing with this whole liquidity fragmentation issue?
Yeah, so I mean, I came from a bit of a TradFi background where, you know, I was at a bank and we were doing some algo trading, and the markets are pretty efficient in that space, right? I guess there's a lot of algo traders, but in crypto, we're kind of seeing a proliferation, as you mentioned, different chains, whether they're roll-ups, L2s, which is further fragmenting the liquidity, the money that exists across the space. So making sure that users get the best price on whatever they're executing a trade on is very hard when you have to, you know, source liquidity from different places. And that's on centralized exchanges. It's across, you know, a ton of different dApps. It's across interfaces. And it's very hard as a retail investor or just an on-chain user to know, am I getting the best price? What is the best price? That's why people default to their favorite interface, whether they're using 1inch, Llama Swap, or it might be Cow Swap. There's always a price discrepancy that exists. So that's one of the things that I wanted to, you know, try and take on ourselves and to improve the efficiency of these markets, because I think if we're going to lead to a better financial future, then users have to be getting the best price. And, you know, in terms of Caddy, it's, I guess, you know, just something that works out of the box and it will get you the best price on everything.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it's something that could be very, very beneficial in terms of, like, you know, connecting all of these fragmented pools of liquidity. I mean, another thing that's kind of somewhat related to that is just the whole bridging experience, right? I remember we had a conversation recently about this, and I just felt like, as someone who does so much trading and moving of funds on chain, it's so frustrating to deal with bridges, right? It is far from solved as a problem in the industry, right? And so, again, speaking of growth and growing the industry and getting to where we want to get to in terms of our goals, what do you think we can do to improve the whole bridging experience, right? Because I feel like a user shouldn't need to know about all these different L1s and L2s. They should just be able to trade and move money around frictionlessly, right? So what do you think is the right solution there? And I'm very curious of your general thoughts as well.
Yeah, as you mentioned, you know, bridging is probably one of the worst experiences in this space. And that's resonated across, you know, almost every user. Myself as a user, you know, you mentioned a bridging experience you had where you're kind of waiting 40 minutes for transaction to finalist, like kind of coming out of Gnosis chain and bridging to another chain. And this is really prevalent. And some of the reasons are, like, quite technical, to be honest, why we can't have, you know, as quick bridging as we would like. But, you know, fundamentally, we've got to ask ourselves, like, why do we even have bridging in the first place? We're kind of living in a multi-chain. It's not in a future, it's a present right now, where there's, you know, so many roll-ups and there's different opportunities, right? I remember paying for a ticket for something and I had to use Optimism. It got a bridge there. It's a very cumbersome process to know where I can bridge tokens. And there are some really good efforts from some of our partners, you know, to address that. I think bridge aggregation is a space that I'm super interested in. The likes of LiFi and Socket doing great work there, kind of looking at all the bridges and then saying, this bridge will get you the tokens at the fastest latency, or this will get you the most tokens. So people can optimize for that. But it's still a pain to find out what bridge supports which chain and where your tokens are as well. And even the dApp that you're using, like, you know, what chain is it on? And I think in the future, we don't want to be thinking about what chain you're using. You just want to go and use the application. That's kind of where I see crypto going. And there's no fatigue in using, you know, many different chains, especially when the wallet experience is quite hard. You got to switch chains and you're like, okay, which chain is this on? And I think that we've got a long way to go. There are some really interesting models. I think intent-based bridging, it's a very hot topic right now, where essentially relayers or solvers, or, you know, whatever you want to call them, they're essentially market makers or people who are professional, like professional solvers. They can take on some risk and they can fulfill transactions in a much quicker way. And we want to provide the best user experience for that. So one cool plan we've got with Caddy is to kind of abstract the bridging experience away, but it still remains to be, you know, a very big problem that we need to solve in this space.
Certainly, and one hopes that there'll be some proper solutions in the future. I'm very excited for the stuff that you guys are working on there. So it's clear to see that Caddy is a very useful tool, right? It's like the picture that I'm getting in my head is that it's like a companion on chain. It's like your on chain companion, right? Like it's your sidekick. Your sidekick, right? Your toolkit for navigating the world of on chain, right? So there's a clear demand, right? And so I want to move into the section of the podcast where I talk to you a bit about product, right? So this is a product podcast, this is a growth podcast, right? You know, you're trying to build a product that clearly has demand. Like the problems we spoke about are very painful, right? So I wonder, like, from a product perspective, what are your views on, I also should preface what I'm about to say with the reason why I'm doing this podcast is the quality of products and protocols in the Web3 space is not where it needs to be, right? I do believe that, you know, we have such a long way to go. Obviously, a lot of the technology and the engineering is being done, the research is being done to improve the infrastructure, and that's getting better by the day. But still, there is a huge gap between where we are right now in terms of products and where we need to be. So I wonder, what are your views on products in the Web3 space, and how are you trying to build the best product possible, right? Like, how are you trying to build a world-class product and get adoption on that product?
Yeah, so I think it's a great initiative, this podcast, right? To focus on product, and it's something that we need to see a lot more of. If you think about fintech apps, like how easy it is to get on board with a bank account with just a mobile number, obviously, like, there are drawbacks, like you're not in custody and, you know, like, kind of bad things can happen. There's fees, which are sometimes egregious as well. But the user experience of this, of like, you know, I download a Monzo app, which we have here in the UK, and then with a phone number that's, you know, just you quickly onboard and you now have a bank account. Right now, it's very hard to do that in crypto because we still have seed phrases. So there are some different mechanics that we need to get around. There are really good initiatives. I think a lot of people talk about some exciting tech like account abstraction with 4337 to be able to get around this. We've already had social sign-in to keep seed phrases through MPC for a while. You know, that's kind of taking off. And I think this focus on product is somewhat lacking. And in crypto, you know, it was great to go to DevConnect because I got to hang out with brilliant engineers, you know, people really pushing the boundaries of what's possible on the infrastructure side, as you mentioned. But I do think in crypto, we get lost a little bit because it's really fun to solve hard problems. And especially from engineers who just want to be, you know, like solving the most challenging thing they can. You know, there's, at the end of the day, a reason why we're here, a reason why we're building this for users. So users are the most important thing. That's kind of how we think about it. And I think just being very close to them is really important. So, you know, product is a process, right? So can the solution that you're designing be actually useful to the end user? So it's got to be about, sure, there's technology, but you don't want to build anything unnecessary, right? That's going to cost you time without knowing that this is the right thing to build. So I think, you know, like, talking to users, being as close to them as possible, kind of hanging out with them, just making sure they understand, you know, like, well, you understand exactly their pain points. You know, we do encourage as much feedback as possible. So, you know, we just launched this way to report bugs from every screen that in Caddy now. And then having a really good process for the engineers in the company to really understand that. Because I think, you know, when you raise money and then you onboard new engineers, it's very easy to, you know, separate out product from engineering, whereas I think it should just be one and the same. I kind of even want backend engineers, people who are a little bit further out from user-facing interfaces and everything that is, you know, more like, you know, on the UI side. I want them to understand the user's problems because that's ultimately going to give them the framework to design their solution and not get lost in the details of engineering. But, you know, it's very easy to say that as a small team. We'll have to see as we scale how we can keep this product focus. And the other thing is, you know, making sure you jump on calls, the users actually like the product, kind of just like watching them use it. We have a new onboarding that we're launching. So I hopped on with a user today and then, you know, just saw how they were using it, which is often in very unexpected ways, but that's some of the best insights that you get. And I think it can be a slower process to do it this way, but it's definitely a way which you can, you know, really understand the problems that people face in this space.
Yeah, I think what you said there is very interesting, and I definitely agree. I think a couple of things to note, right? The first is Monzo. Monzo, you know, as you mentioned, is an example of a good fintech. I'm a massive fan of Monzo. I was an early user of Monzo. And a really interesting thing that they do, and I'm not sure if this is widely known, but in the early days of Monzo, and I'm not sure if they've kept this practice, every single person, engineers, CEO, operations people, product people, growth people would do customer support for in a rota, such that every individual in the company has some interface with the user, and that is a way to develop customer empathy from you know all aspects of the company. I thought that was a really interesting practice. And then another company who's even larger scale, Airbnb, has thought very deeply about how they can ensure that. So there's a thing in products we call shipping the org chart, right? Like a lot of people, when you get to a lot of companies, when they get to a certain size, they ship a product, but you can really tell that like it's a product where it started off with, let's say, for example, like product, right? And then it moved to engineering, and then it moved from engineering to marketing, and then it moved from marketing to sales. And it's so you can tell using the product. It's so like obvious that like the product hasn't been crafted with the whole user journey in mind. Instead, it's been kind of crafted with the whole corporate structure in mind, unfortunately, right? And so Airbnb, and I'll send you this link after this conversation, I'll also post it in the description for those who are listening to the podcast. They map out their entire customer journey for the user and then the host, and then they also below that map the whole product experience and the policy experience and all of this, and they stick it up on every wall in like not every wall but like in every office, and that is the thing that the whole company kind of gets behind, right? And such, this is a way to always keep the customer journey at the core of product development, and I think that's a really powerful mechanism. And Amazon's got a similar thing where they don't grow teams that are larger than a pizza box, right? And they try to have cross-functional teams. Thank you very much. They try to have cross-functional teams at the size of a pizza box, right? Small enough to feed everyone with one pizza box, right? So stuff like that. And so you guys are lucky where you're small and you're nimble and you can have these great interactions between everyone on your team and customers. But and it's good to hear that you're thinking about this at this stage of the company, such that when you get to that stage, when you're a $1 billion company, hopefully you won't be shipping the org chart, but instead shipping a coherent product.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being bullish on Caddy. I definitely agree with that. And I think that's much of a culture thing within a company where it's like, okay, how important are your users, right? And I think crypto is distinctly lacking on this. We kind of see a lot of mechanisms where, people come up with something which is kind of, I mean, maybe it's an interesting mechanism, but they kind of incentivize use. And it's like, why are your users coming to use the product? Maybe it's airdrop farming, maybe it's something else. But really like starting with those users first, like what is their core desire? How are you going to connect that? How are you going to convey that? And that is probably the most important thing. And not just the person who's like, doing the product work needs to understand that. It's everyone in the company. It's everything from the messaging. Like you mentioned Amazon, they also have this practice of like, what is the press release going to like do, what's a PR FAQ, what are all the questions? And then obviously they have, the pizza, keeping teams like really lean and small. And I'm a firm believer in lean teams because I think you can accomplish really great things with just the right people and a strict focus on what the problem that you're solving is. I think that's something that we as an industry need to adopt because, it's done in Web2 and it's done incredibly well. So I'm pretty excited to see better products coming out, things that make more sense. Of course, there's technical stuff to solve. Of course, the industry is nascent. Like we can't scale, managing seed phrases, all these things, but that shouldn't be a consideration for the user. That should be on good product design for someone to say, look, we've made it easy for you. A couple of clicks, you're in, mobile apps. I mean, mobile cryptos, pretty awful right now, I have to say. There's some okay wallets, you know, I would say like Rainbow is quite nice user experience. But like we're just dealing with really bad UX all around the place. So yeah, I think there's a lot that still has to be done and we need to stop putting up with bad UX.
Totally agreed. You said a couple things there that I want to double tap on. The first is the fact that a lot of crypto projects are focused on incentivizing users, right? There's a lot of there are a lot of airdrops out there and airdrop farmers, and there's a lot of, dare I say, fake or fabricated or forced is probably a better word, usage of these protocols. So I know you have a whole rant that you want to hit me with in terms of points. So I'll let you talk your piece on that, because I'm sure you've got some great points there.
Yeah, I mean,
no pun intended.
I mean, points is a very recent phenomenon, but this has been going on for a while, right? So airdrops, I mean, I think in a lot of cases it does make sense, right? In terms of like, if you're going to bootstrap a network, then it's very hard to solve the cold start problem where you need to incentivize some activity, whether that's to secure a new L1 or maybe a multi-sig bridge like an L2. Like, you know, there's some interesting mechanics around it, but I think it distracts from the real problem of, are you actually solving a strong enough pain point for your users, right? Because if you can incentivize like someone to use your product, then you kind of lure yourself into this false sense of security. Like, hey, look, our volumes are good. Our users are like, we've got like, you know, we're growing. And I think it can be valuable. And a lot of entrepreneurs, founders, people building in the space need to do this to survive. So, you know, they got a raise coming up, right? And then they're like, how can we increase our metrics for this raise? And it's a survival thing. And obviously crypto users have come to expect this. So there's airdrop groups. I'm not saying airdrops are bad at all. But I'm saying, you know, use in the right place at the right time, they can be very powerful. But I see a lot of kind of maybe low hanging fruit attempts to gain traction without it being real. And I kind of wonder what's going to happen in the long run when they haven't thought through the long-term roadmap, because they've distracted themselves from building a good product that people really like. And, you know, that doesn't mean that you just don't grow. You could have growth mechanics built in there, which don't rely on these incentives. And for a lot of products, particularly dApps, you know, it's different with like protocols where you have to secure networks and places where you need liquidity to be, you know, there. But we have seen that liquidity is quite fleeting. People are pretty mercenary with their capital. So they tend to like whatever the hot opportunity is, wherever they think they can get the most money. And that means it's not sustained growth. And it also muddies the metrics. I did want to kind of like dive into metrics as well. But I think it's, you know, it's very easy to look at like numbers, like number go up, chart up and to the right and say, look, we're doing such a great job, but without really analyzing like why the users are there, what they're getting out of the product. And for us, like, it's quite simple. It's like, okay, are we solving a problem? Are we not solving a problem? There's no like incentive mechanism to say, you know, right now we have like, you know, 10x the volumes that we did last month or something. It's just like, are we solving a problem and is it strong enough?
Yeah, that was a great set of words there about points. I definitely agree with the sentiment there. A couple of things. So first is, I obviously know what points are, you know what points are. But I think, and many listeners who listen to this also probably know what points are as well. But for those who don't, maybe it might be good to backtrack a little bit and say what points are. You can kind of assume what points are based on what you just said there. But just for clarification purposes, I would love for you to maybe backtrack a little bit and say what points are, and then maybe that will be useful for people.
So if we put ourselves in like an on-chain user's mindset, right? So they're testing out a protocol, and there might be some expectation that this protocol is going to drop them, like do an airdrop, so release a token. And now there's no clear way to say like, you know, how many tokens am I going to receive? A lot of these airdrops, they take a snapshot, which is based on on-chain activity. And then, you know, they'll get an allocation of the total airdrop amount. What points does is gamifies it in a really interesting way. So users can actually see maybe on a leaderboard, you know, Rainbow have a leaderboard and they tell you exactly exactly how to make points, swap with our app, you know, deposit funds, use these features. And then there's been these questing platforms as well, which they, the fact that they found so much product market fit, especially in the bear market, from, you know, like there's Galaxy, there's Zeely, there's Layer 3, there's, you know, there's Intract. Like a lot of people kind of go into these platforms, they earn a lot of money from doing this. And that's like absolutely fine because they get to test out a product and they use, so the products themselves get some feedback. So they know, you know, are they doing well? It's a good way to fail fast if they think, you know, we had this idea, we wanted some users to early, you know, early adopters to test it. And maybe they found some bugs or some problems. So it's not a bad way of getting feedback, but the expectation with points is that you're going to get some incentive. It does make it more flexible because, you know, the roadmap can change. You can introduce new ways to get points. It generates a lot of hype. And you can see from the number of Twitter followers that they get, that could be like, you know, a quest that people do to kind of get more points. So it's interesting. And it's just a way of gamifying, I guess, aspects of your app, which I think, you know, every company should do to an extent, especially if you're like a user-facing product, like a B2C company. And yeah, it's kind of really taken off in the crypto space in the last couple of months. So I think with Rainbow kind of leading the way on that. And Frentech as well. I mean, Frentech makes sense. You're given points and then it's got a little parachute, so you're expecting an airdrop from that at some point as well.
Yeah, the marketing on this stuff is crazy. But yeah, thank you for breaking that down. And yeah, very, very well done. Another thing I wanted to talk to you about, and you kind of alluded to it a little bit before that answer that you gave there, is your experience building product analytics, right? So from having discussions with a lot of product folks, founders in the Web3 space, also building my own products and founding my own companies, I know that the experience of building analytics or using analytics and tracking aspects of your product is a lot harder in Web3 than Web2. And that's due to various reasons. But one of them is this notion of pseudonymity with blockchains. So I wonder, first of all, how do you, what are your key metrics? How do you measure them? What's your monthly volume, right? If that's, I'm assuming that's one of your major metrics that you keep track of, but what's your general thesis, your general kind of approach with product analytics?
Yeah, so I mean, one of the good things about blockchains is that they're completely public. So you mentioned pseudonymity, okay, you don't know exactly who's on the end of this wallet address, but these things are tracked on chain. So in terms of what we're doing, like it's actually more of a kind of Web2 approach because we've got a Chrome extension and Kadi doesn't have smart contracts themselves. So it's kind of not a simple Dune dashboard, but you know, Dune takes data on chain and then you could write SQL queries to produce really nice charts. And yeah, I think it's a great way for a lot of protocols, dApps, to track their metrics. And shout out to all the wizards who are creating these dashboards, getting awesome insights. It's kind of a very messy, like unstructured space in blockchain data because it's changing all the time. It's not like, you know, you've got like very nice tables and you can like analyze the data very easily. So, but the cool thing is it's all public. So anyone can contribute, anyone can take anyone else's work. With us, since we're building this product, which is on the Google Chrome Web Store, you know, we do take in transactions. So we monitor its monthly volumes is like kind of core KPI. It's the number of users who've onboarded. It's a number of swaps. And it's like, you know, we can monitor things like the chain usage or the number of errors in, you know, transactions as well, or which aggregators are providing correct gas forecasts, for example. So a lot of it is, you know, still to unpack. We use, you know, just simple product analytics tools like Mixpanel, you know, just pretty good for a small team, and really kind of tracking down our core KPIs. This is very important, right? So every week we have a stand up where we just make sure that we're heading in the right direction, looking at these charts, making sure they're kind of showing an exponential chart. That's super important for us. And it's kind of fun because you run experiments, you kind of onboard new users, and you can kind of track things in real time to see, are these working? You know, will it actually be something that's going to be profitable for you or something that's going to be, you know, kind of a waste of time? And I think it helps you fail fast as well. So if you have like an idea and you release it into the wild, then you can say, okay, like, have we hit the metrics that we expected to? If not, why not? Are there any tweaks we can do? And you can say, maybe it's time to cut this. So actually, you know, going back to the very start where I mentioned we do centralized exchanges, we found that that wasn't very popular. And we used to display centralized exchange routes by default. And then we saw that, you know, not many people wanted to onboard with API keys, which is kind of how it works. And, you know, it's kept self-hosted, so it's non-custodial. It's all stored in the same way a seed phrase is stored in a wallet. But it just wasn't popular. So we kind of removed it. Like, you can still onboard with centralized exchanges, but we realized that that was not a worthwhile endeavor. And, you know, we weren't generating any volumes from it. So it was kind of something that we kind of moved on from. But yeah, tracking metrics is super important in crypto. And there's also external forces as well. Like, markets have been pretty crazy, and it's been nice to see more volumes come up. You mentioned, like, you know, how much we're swapping a month. It's around 200K a month across 800 users, you know, 500 who are more active. And, you know, I think it's a small number in terms of, like, number of users, but we are seeing that the markets are having a bit of an influence in, obviously, like, more people are trading on chain and, you know, buying meme coins, shit coins, whatever. And it's, yeah, pretty interesting to see. I think, you know, like, every crypto company is subject to market forces, which are out of their hands, but there are a lot of things that you can control in-house as well.
Very stoic, my friend. And also, just to double tap on this, I think analytics are particularly important if you're building a consumer business, right? And it seems like you guys are thinking very deeply about that, which is awesome. So we're coming into the final chapter of this podcast, and I want to ask two last questions. The first is, for something like Caddy, there is an element of trust, right? In the sense that you're trusting Caddy to give you the best execution on your trades, to protect you from phishing, spamming, rugging, and to be your trusted companion, right? That's, you know, it's there, right? Trusted companion, the keyword trust. So what are you doing as a company, as a product builder, to engender that trust from your users?
Yeah, that, I mean, trust in crypto is probably one of the most important things to solve for. You know, whether we can trust the applications, the teams, I think just because this space is so full of scams and bad actors, which is unfortunate, but it's just, you know, nature of the space, right? So a lot of users are very scared to test out new products, which I think is why, like, we see wallets which maybe don't have the best UX dominate. For example, like, you know, Rabi wallet is a much better experience than MetaMask because you don't have to worry about switching chains. It has transaction simulation, whereas MetaMask probably has, like, 30 times more users than they do. And it's just like, you trust MetaMask because it's the wallet that's been around the longest. That's a browser wallet. It's the most widely used one. And the same thing goes for Uniswap. These are really inherently sticky products because they've been around forever. You know, people trust the pink interface, and you know, even if it's gonna charge extra fees, people trust MetaMask with a swap, right? It's gonna cost you 0.875% extra per swap. And solving this trust issue is really important. So there's a number of ways to do it. So I think, you know, with us, we're trying to build in public. We're obviously small at the moment. So I wouldn't say, like, you know, we've got everything down, but building in public, making sure that, you know, the users understand the values of the company. I think open sourcing things is really important as well. We're not open source just yet, but we do plan on doing that in the future, probably when we have a few more users and, you know, some more complex interactions as well. That's one of the great things about crypto is, like, a lot of the code you can audit. Not saying everyone has to be a code auditor, but, you know, there are very smart people who can look into the code, catch bugs. You know, for example, Safe were just launching a wallet integration, an account abstraction wallet. And one of the devs from Zero Dev, like, picked up a bug it before they launched it. So that's one of the beauties of, you know, this space. And I think trust is something that, you know, it takes a long time to build. So becoming a brand in the space that people can trust, there's a lot of different ways to get it. You can get endorsements, right, from whether it's a big influencer or some of your investors or, you know, people in the space who are using the product, but also just kind of making it known that what you're building, the values that you have, and the kind of technology that's going into it, as well as, like, kind of showing team. Not saying that it has to be docs, but, you know, there are many Anon devs who are well respected and trusted in the space. But yeah, that's something that, you know, has to be built over a long period of time. And it's also something that is very hard to copy. You can copy the tech, like, you can fork X number of protocols, or you can fork, like, you know, someone could just build a Caddy competitor. It might take them, you know, a few months or, like, you know, maybe longer. But if they can't really, you know, fork the trust, that's something that's very hard, right? So yeah, I think with our particular application, it's a Chrome extension. So there's a lot of permissions that Chrome extensions have, and users on the whole, some of them are quite scared to download new ones. So they create new browser profiles, which I think is really smart. And they make sure that, you know, they're not like putting all their funds at risk. But that is one particular barrier. I guess one of the good things about Chrome extensions is they're inherently pretty sticky, because once it's downloaded, you don't really think about it and it's there. It's not like you have to remember to use this new interface every time. And that's kind of one of the cool things about Caddy. It just pops up when you need it. It should do, like, you know, when you're swapping, when there's a phishing scam, when there's something else. But yeah, so trust is like one of the most important things to solve in this space.
It is indeed. And it sounds like you're thinking deeply about that. So, you know, I'm excited to see how you develop the product and continue to build trust with your users. Jamin, it's been my absolute pleasure. You're clearly someone who thinks deeply about on-chain execution and product and growing your business. So it was a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for coming. And I look forward to potentially doing another one of these very soon.
Thank you so much, Abel. Really appreciate the opportunity to be on.